Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 122. Before I dive into today's guest, I want to let you know that I've been working hard on getting the launch ready for Community Manager University, which is a training and development platform for community managers to support them from day one to becoming a regional manager. The platform includes mini courses that cover the major buckets of the community manager role, including operations, marketing, finance, leadership, and of course, community management. The content is laid out in a graduated learning path so that the community manager can identify what content is relevant to them given their experience. They will also get resources, templates, Q&A calls, and a Slack group for peer networking. If you're interested in being notified when the program is available, you can go to www.everythingcoworking.com/community managers. I am super excited about today's guest. I will not make this intro very long. Mike reached out to me. He's a podcast listener and shared his story. And I said, we need to share your story with my audience. And I got to meet him in person at the Global Workspace Association conference a couple of weeks ago. So you're going to love Mike shares his story about he's both landlord, owns properties and runs co-working spaces in them, and then does management agreements with other building owners that want to do the same thing. And I know we often get asked questions about how that works and what that looks like. And so he shares just a ton of information about his journey and his relationships with other building owners and what they're doing in their own portfolio. So it was so great to get to know more about Mike. So I hope you really enjoy our conversation. All right. I am super excited to be joined today by Mike Creel. He is in the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area. He's CEO of Launch Workplaces, and he reached out a few weeks ago before the GWA conference, which was in Maryland a couple of weeks ago, and shared a little bit about his business, and I was super intrigued. And Mike, thanks for reaching out, and thank you for joining me today.
No, thank you. It's great to be here. You know, obviously wanted to go to the conference. It was feasible because it was very close to all of our business. And we've been in this business since 2013. So I wrote some notes. In 3 days at GWA, I wrote down 42 items to either follow up on or learn more about. And I've already followed up with connections I made at GWA and already executed a contract to get some help from someone at GWA. So for anyone who's at any phase of this business, starting out 5 years in, 10 years in, GWA to me was really beneficial because of the willingness to share. And I've been in some other associations where it's not been that way. So, and it, you know, may change someday, it may not, but right now, really bright people. Everybody's really encouraged about the trajectory of the growth of this business and really willing to help each other. I can't say enough about it. It was exceeded my expectations. I was very happy with it.
Mike, your check is in the mail.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks. You're my new favorite podcast guest, and we haven't even gotten into the interview. Yeah, good. I'm glad you had that experience. We had some positive feedback from others, but also kudos to you for following up. That's the worst thing is to go to a conference and have those 42 items and a bunch of business cards and then kind of go back to daily life and not actually implement, you know, some of the ideas. So that's awesome.
Right.
And even that with your big golf outing yesterday. So you've been busy.
Yes. Managed to plow through that.
So share a little bit about you, your background, and along with that, tell us the story of how you got into co-working / flexible office, kind of do a range of things in the industry. So
sure.
Give us the scoop.
So I work for a 127-year-old family-owned commercial real estate company. So I'll say it again, 127-year-old family-owned real estate company in the greater Baltimore, D.C. area. So right there, I mean, there's not many of us left. There's one family member still active in the business, the CEO, the current CEO. And, you know, we've tinkered around we have some recreational properties. We do golf courses. We own some powerboat marinas. We have under 1 million square feet of commercial real estate, a couple shopping centers, a hotel. You know, for a while we were doing the working, living, fun type of portfolio. But really started, you know, commercial was always really the engine that kind of pulled the rest of us along. And back in 2013, we started to see some trends that concerned us a little bit. We're mostly suburban markets, you know, outside the beltways of Washington and Baltimore. And, you know, like everyone else, the larger tenants weren't as plentiful. And there was a flight to quality that lasted a long time through our last recession. And at the end of the day, if an institution wanted the same tenant we wanted, you know, just it was hard to compete. And we didn't want to do that every day. So we came up with the idea of, well, instead of 10,000 feet at a time, what if we did an office at a time? Kind of, you know, joking, well, that'd be funny. Well, look who's laughing now, right? So, you know, 5 years later, that's what we do. So we created Launch Workplaces. And in 2014, we took 16,000 feet of space that came back to us. And instead of putting it on the market, we did our best. We did as much research as we could on what's the right size of an office, how much co-working, what other amenities. I'm fortunate enough to not need a ton of information to say, yeah, well, let's give it a try. So 2014 opened our first space inside our portfolio. Luckily, and I think with a lot of good hard work as well, we were very successful a lot faster than we anticipated, especially in a suburban setting. Because if you remember back then, as this was just really taking off, nobody spoke of suburban markets. And even right now, I think as this second wave of flexible office space is really kind of pushing through the country, people are just starting to recognize the ability for this stuff to exist, you know, successfully in suburban markets. So fast forward, we had 5 locations open inside of our own portfolio probably within 3 years. They all did very well. No intention really at that point of making this anything other than kind of a self-feeding system for ourselves. And a couple of things happened. So, you know, one storyline will be, you know, we started to grow our own tenants, and I'll come back to that. That's an interesting thing that we've done. And then kind of more poignant to what we're talking about here right now is we started to get a bunch of phone calls from, you know, similar folks, smaller 3 to 5 building owners that knew of us and said, what are you guys up to with this Launch Workplaces thing? Tell us how it works. So I entertained a lot of folks and brought them in and talked to them and showed them how, you know, why we did it, how we did it. And literally had someone say, could you help me do that? And came back and said, all right, I think there's a business here, right? I mean, we can't give this away forever. So put together a group, a whole business plan and a model behind, okay, how do we monetize this? And is it worth monetizing? And what are we going to do and what are we not going to do? And again, back then, as some of the bigger players just started gobbling up space with leases, again, we're a real estate company. We're like, you know what? I'm not sure I want to have that kind of growth, and I don't want 10 and 15 year leases in supermarkets with real expensive rates. That intimidates me a little bit. We're a little bit more conservative than that. So we've only ever partnered with owners and some government entities with service models and managed models, which is completely different. And frankly, one of the reasons we don't have 50 locations right now, we have 9, is it was a little more methodical growth. The managed model is a much longer sales cycle. You have to make sure you have like-minded partners and they understand what co-working flexible office space really is. Our model talks about, we were joking after GWA, that activate your building. Like, we coined that in 2013.
Well, I was just going to say, you were so early in these attempts because the landlords, I mean, even, you know, we partnered with NAIOP on the conference, and one of the reasons they were partnering with us is, you know, they just still had so many members who were just like earmuffs, you know, about what was happening. And so for you to sort of invoke the curiosity of some of the local owners, you know, even before this industry just became so mainstream. Right. And to your point, even in the suburbs today, unless you're reading the Wall Street Journal and fascinated by WeWork, you may still not know this whole thing really exists.
Correct. So most of our introductions to owners are, okay, we've heard of WeWork. You can't even reference Regis really, because, you know, poor Regis is out there. Yeah, we did this in 1985 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they get zero credit for
it. Totally.
And now WeWork created this. I'm like, yeah, not really. Yeah. You know, so
they popularized it. And I think that's a lot of the discussion, like, thank you for doing a lot of the things you did, despite sort of the shenanigans going on right now.
Exactly. You served us a purpose in introducing this to folks at a quicker rate than it would have been adapted throughout the industry, right? I mean, we all know commercial real estate doesn't make abrupt changes ever.
Yeah.
So,
and also it's almost like a good problem to have, that your outlook is sort of conservative. You're a real estate company. We're not going to go, because like a lot of folks may have been well served to have that sort of limitation, right? Because going out and signing leases that are turning out, I remember, so my husband and I met in business school, and when I signed my first lease and put that personal guarantee on, and it was 10-year lease, and he's like, so it's total arbitrage. All we're doing here is hoping this works. Right. Arbitrage for 10 years.
Right.
Kind of. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Buy low, sell high, and hope that that lease doesn't, you know, the deal doesn't change too much on the renewal. Yeah.
Right. So it was difficult, right? So then when people started growing like crazy, signing lease after lease after lease, right? Makes the sale pitch, doesn't make it any easier when you're talking to someone about, oh, I'd like to partner with you.
Yep.
Like we're a real estate company who developed this inside of real estate company, and we think all the upside goes to the owner. Like we get paid.
Right, that's your mindset. Right? Totally.
The arbitrage is yours, everything's yours. Yep. We run it for you and we help you. Not nearly as sexy as, hey, you got 20,000 feet at $50 a foot, I'll sign a 15-year lease, right? So it really is, I'd say I've never sold anything. I've just educated someone enough where they believe in what we believe. And that's a big difference.
Yep.
So you got to be very patient. We've had the same meeting two or three times with folks to make sure they understand. You know, we're very clear with what's the process before we get to a management agreement. And as long as you say yes, we go to the next step. If you say no, then we don't. And we're fine with that.
So my audience is always wildly curious about management agreements. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're willing to share kind of about how you approach them, framework, you know, who's taking the risk, who's getting the reward, kind of anything about the general structure and approach that you would share.
The number one thing I would say is not one size fits all. So
right. I know people hate that answer. I'm like, well, it depends on so many
snowflake.
Things. They don't want that. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't say snowflake. So I get another point in my column there. Right. Patience and flexibility and openness. So learn enough about your building owner. Right. The buzzwords now are skin in the game. Right. Everybody loves to say that. Well, that actually does mean something different for every building owner. So you need to do enough homework and to spend enough time with these folks to say, what is it that would make you comfortable? I can suggest what we've done with other partners. I'm open to listening to ideas that you have, and we can figure something out is the easiest way to approach that. To be a little bit more, you know, rubber meet the road there. You know, there's a lot of buckets it can fall into. Do I want to make a contribution to TI of the building? Do I want to guarantee numbers I promise I'm going to achieve? An interesting one that people might not think about is furniture. In a traditional commercial real estate transaction, furniture is not part of that.
Right. The landlord is never touching that.
Right.
Not their competency.
So,
yep. And not in their budget, really, to support.
Right. Yeah. That's your responsibility as the tenant. We've built out a process where we can bring the furniture in, run it through the operations of the business. In essence, we're buying you your furniture.
Yep.
So that's, if you can help them get their head around that and explain that to them, that's a really big benefit to them. And then you can do revenue shares and management fees. And like I said, it's all slightly different. But really, to have a managed model, to have an agreement with someone, right? I want a little skin in the game. Okay, I understand you're going to give me, you know, a bulk of the upside. And honestly, I haven't met any building owners yet that have really been outlandish in what skin in the game they're asking for as a total number of the project, right? I mean, we look at certain size spaces and up, and you know, we're generally, you know, north of $1 million for build outs and things of that nature. And
your FF&E number is going to be pretty substantial too.
Right.
Yeah.
And for anyone out there who works in furniture, I spent, you know, back in 2013 and 14, I went to a lot of the big furniture makers and said, look, there's an opportunity here. It's not a problem. It's an opportunity. If you can make on-demand furniture somehow, you'd be a trillionaire. And was told by the first six places I went, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not how it works, Mike. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we've really worked hard to try to find people to say, hey, if you believe in what all this data says, that the workplace is changing, the way people want to work is changing, how they work from, you know, the 20 somethings to the 70 pluses. If you think that 30, 40 plus million people are going to change their habits for a long period of time, and this is how they want things to be, if you could be first to market with some of this stuff, you're going to do really well. So that's a challenge today still.
I was going to say, I'm like, are you harboring some secret source of...
I'm not. I would not harbor. I would gladly let anybody know that, oh, you know, ABC Furniture Company has a portal and you can order a desk and a chair and a sit-stand desk and it can arrive in 2 days.
Or send it back if somebody doesn't want it. That's the other problem.
Or get it fixed.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, wait, you took the screw out of that you... broken the warranty. Thank you. So, you know, we've been patient. That's really key for folks that want to be in a managed model. I would say understand, right? You know, we say know your why. Really understand your purpose of being an operator in this world. If it is, I'm going to make a run at arbitrage for this foreseeable future, right? That's a tough one. If you're really dedicated to helping companies grow and providing resources and, you know, all the buzzwords, community and networking and all that stuff. And right, find a building owner that shares a lot of those same values. We built a 61-point proprietary evaluation system, a building, right? We can only think of 61 things. We're trying to get to 100. So the first thing we do when we meet someone is say, okay, we try to establish some rapport. What's your history? What's your interest in this? And then we put them through this evaluation tool. And it goes from what do we think the mindset of the owner is, all the way down to the attributes of the physical asset, amenities, safety, lighting, parking, free, not free, everything. And we give them a number, and it ranges from 0 to 100. So, you know, 80 to 100, we call that the green light. We share it with the owner and say, look, you know, it, cursory review, but we think that this would be successful and it would follow absorption that we've seen in the past and we'd all be happy. If it falls in the 60 to 80, we call it the yellow light, where we're like, all right, there's a couple things here that aren't surprises to you, right? You're at a dead end street and you're the only paid parking.
Weird entrance, right? Yeah.
A couple hiccups that, you know, exist that may interfere a little bit. We say, you know, we delay success a little bit, but nothing you can't overcome. And then we say, if you're below 60, maybe look for redevelopment play or something, but we're not interested. You know, you're not interested, right, either. If you've got 60% of your building vacant for 8 years, right, there's a reason. And
But it is an important point, because I think there are landlords today who think this is a solve for bad buildings. And it's like just checking up the building and it's not, right.
Correct.
You still need really, I love your, and I think there are operators, not all, but some who will make too many concessions for a management agreement opportunity. And
correct.
So I love your checkpoint to say, like, look, it has to essentially be a deal you'd sign a lease on if you were in the lease signing business.
Correct.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're not going to do it just because it's a management opportunity, because you need to be successful and you want the owner to be successful.
Correct. And we evaluate a fair amount of opportunities and we keep track. And over 50% of them, we stop the process early and say, it just doesn't fit our model. Maybe it's another operator. Maybe it's a different opportunity. Maybe it's spec suites. You know, there's a million different ways you can try to do this. But you have to hold yourself true to that, because, again, you watch some of these meteoric growth rates and, you know, you're picking up 4 deals a year I mean, you kind of feel like you're getting left behind, but slow and steady still wins the race. And now, granted, there are some really good big operators that are going to do very well. I'm not painting with a completely broad brush. That's just not our model. And we're super cautious. We want long-term relationships. We've been in the real estate industry 100 years, and we want to be in it at least 50 more. So, you know, we take a lot of pride in picking our partners, and it's really important to us. And it makes slip-ups a lot easier and makes success wonderful when you're with the right people.
Mike, I was just going to ask you to circle back on, who does your brand serve? Like, who do you design your spaces to attract? And is that consistent across your locations, or does it vary by market?
It varies a little bit. So it's a great question, because we're suburban. So we don't have a niche in any one location where we're, you know, cyber or just fast growth tech or healthcare. We have found that in launch workplaces environments, it is a wide range of industries. It is a lot of folks that are serial entrepreneurs, that they're just a little bit more patient, kind breed. There is that wonderful, it's almost like success guilt, where they've accomplished stuff and they just feel this need to give back and help other people out. So on average, our audience is a little bit, I guess older is still an acceptable word, more mature in life, usually pretty accomplished, maybe on their second, third, fourth venture. There's patience, there's calmness, there's the right amount of urgency. There's a tremendous amount of sharing, partnerships. 65% of the people inside launch workplaces do business with each other. So we have complementing businesses where, you know, digital marketing group, we don't have 15 of them. We'll have one or two. You know, we don't have a bunch of certified financial planners. Not that there's anything wrong with them, but it's not a pool of sales opportunities either. Yeah. So we're fortunate enough. We have plenty of locations that are local to each other, where if we say, you know, we've got a couple of those here, 4 miles down the road, we've got another location with some options in there, is really how we build them all. So we're agnostic to business and industry. But just by the nature of being in suburbia, it's a different person than not a lot of people biking to our locations. Just, you know, we do heat maps of where do people live, and I'm astounded. It's over 10 miles away on average. So you're driving by other operators. And we really work hard at being kind of the hospitality company and making, when you're here, you don't ever need to get back in your car to do anything. We can take care of everything we can for you. Make sure you're accomplishing what you want to accomplish at work. We're not a CAG environment. We don't do any of that stuff. We don't do summer camp. But, you know, we'll do networking, bagel and breakfasts and some mimosas and funding or success for somebody all the time. But we say, look, we're here to get work done. We're a startup trying to grow. You're a startup trying to grow. We're helping each other. We do have access to tons of resources. We provide tremendous amount of professional resource and learning opportunities for folks along the way, networking and fun. So it's a really unique environment in the suburban markets.
What does your product mix look like? Is it mostly offices and some kind of shared amenity space?
It is. We've done enough and looked at enough of these where everything is now formula driven, which is wonderful from back way in the beginning when you'd spend hours wondering what to do. I can size any space instantly. In 4 minutes, we can tell you if it's a feasible opportunity financially, you know, among the other measurements of the model. But in the suburban market, it's like between 75 and 80% office and 20-25% open desk, co-work, lounge, however you want to phrase it. And then inside the office, we have ratios of, you know, onesies, twosies, threes, fours. It's a very funny phenomenon, which I actually didn't think of. Nobody said this at the GWA. There's a phenomenon in suburbia called private co-working. And I'm like, it's such a small office. We call them micros, right? Mm-hmm. I want an 88 square foot office. Like, that's a closet. But I want the ability to shut a door. And I want the ability to go outside and socialize when I want. So we tease and go, yeah, it's private co-working. So it's on the scale of 75 to 80% folks want a door. At some point in their day, they want a door.
Totally. I mean, I think that's to your point. I mean, outside of the urban core, I think that's common. And although I think we still sort of fight the misconception that door equals not interacting. So I love your stat that 65% of your members do business with each other. I mean, that means they're finding their way to interact. They're opening their door and coming out here and there.
Correct.
When they need to and when they want to. I want to talk about, so you mentioned when we were first connecting, and this is, you know, part of the unique value proposition that you offer since you have a portfolio. You talked about kind of an ecosystem and organic tenant growth that you've seen happening. And again, you've been doing this and seeing the value of this. And I think in the industry overall, some folks have sort of yet to prove this out. Because when you said it, I was like, oh, he has evidence of this.
Yeah.
He's already been doing it. So people sort of, you know, it hypothetically think this makes a lot of sense, but there has not in many cases where folks are doing this in buildings enough time, you know, gone by to see lease turnovers and in companies growing and some of that happening. So I'd love to hear how that's working for you.
Yeah. And, you know, when we started out, I think pie in the sky, we were like, this would be great. Right? Companies are going to flourish and they're going to need space and, you know, time will tell. Again, fortunately, it's happened. I have some, we always say we have proof of concept here. We've grown. So the first place we opened was 2014, 16,000 feet. It was a 5-story building and we were on the second floor. So, right. First of all, you need space to grow, right? I mean, that's important. So inside our own building, wonderful, and we had occupancy in the building. So in no random order, we've grown 5 tenants out of that launch location. 4 of them took space inside that building, and one of them we put in a different building in our portfolio because they needed more space than we had. So there's value to that, right? So we went back and said, okay, what did it add and what did it not force us to spend? So we put $1.5 million of gross revenue to the top line, adding these tenants, trickled down to a little over $1 million net income, cash flow to our business. Of the 4 places inside the building, 3 of them were those tricky, tough to lease, one side of windows, you know, not the most attractive key locations in the building. Because we worked with the owner of the business, we didn't deal with tenant brokers. And mind you, we're in the real estate business. You know, we have brokers. But what happens is the owner of the business comes to the director of member success. That's the person that's ultimately responsible for running that location. Says, I got the grant. I got funding. We're killing it. I need to hire 18 people. I need 2,000 feet. We go, wonderful. Let's go up to third floor. So we bring our real estate guy in and say, Mr. Jones needs 2,000 feet. This is 2,100. What can we do? We walk him or her around and say, like, what would you like it to look like? And we start talking about finishes. And then suddenly it's not, well, the market TI is $59. It's, I would like some open space. I'd like some private office, a kitchen, and a conference room. Okay. What kind of finishes? I'd like them to look like launch. Okay.
Right.
That's always the easy one. I'd like it to look like that. Okay. So, you know, besides adding so much value to the bottom line, we've also saved over $300,000 in commissions and build outs because we're working directly with the business owner and we're the building owner. So nobody cares what market TI and market concessions, and they don't even understand that. I'm having success. I'm growing. I would like a space that we can grow into, call our own, and if you build what I have described, and it's a, you know, we show people other rents around the area and just hold ourselves accountable, say, look, this is about what market rate is. It's beautiful how it works out.
It's really such a more natural experience for the business owner, because when you have to go get your first commercial lease, you're like, what?
Yeah.
I have to do what? I don't know how to do those things. I don't have time to do those things. It's so not part of what they do. And you're saying, yeah, we'll help you just transition from this space that you love and we'll make more of that for you and we'll help you because we know how to do both, which is unusual. Yeah. Right.
And the best part is you're still in the building where you started. You have all the connections. You have all the friends. You're invited to all the tenants in the building are invited to all the events. That connection stays. When people have success in these flexible work environments, they don't want to just go, okay, I'm going to take 2,000 from the 13th story of some 20-story building and become this anonymous thing again. I want to stay connected to the energy and the folks that helped me get here. And how can I help them get here? So there were some discussions at GWA about, you know, I'm a co-working operator and I'm going to lease an entire floor in a building and I'm going to do the arbitrage thing and I'm going to do well. Right? We are a co-working operator that takes a floor in a building, integrates it into your entire building, and puts a soul in that entire place. It's a really different model. And we have proof that when it works, it's glorious and it's wonderful and everybody wants to be a part of it. We have tenants that have come into our building in the recent past who just want to be near our flexible workspace. They're too big to be in it because at some point it doesn't make sense to rent 80% of it. Just take a floor. We want to be near those people. We want to be near that energy. We might be trying to pick off talent. We might be trying to put some flexible options in for our workforce. It's a magnet. When it's working, it is a magnet.
Did you hear Lisa Picard's session at the conference? She's the CEO of EQ, and she was using the analogy of it used to be that building owners would sort of look at their buildings as like the logging industry. Like, okay, I got about 10 years until this one's ready, and you just sort of leave it alone until then, and then you sort of send the broker out to harvest. And so she's talking now, you know, then people want, you know, I won't remember her exact, but like then it turns into, well, they don't just want the lumber, they want 2x4s. Well, now they don't want 2x4s, they want, you know, some sort of finished product. And that's what you're offering is you're saying, like, we're not going to just give you, you know, the raw shell and good luck. And you need to figure that out. And oh, by the way, you know, this is how much it's going to cost you to build the thing. Like, you're helping them do that. And it's just such a, and thinking, I mean, the whole ecosystem model is so, it seems natural, but it is still new for owners to think that way and to adjust and evolve.
Yeah, it's amazingly unnatural in the commercial environment. And here's an extension of it. The commercial is eyes wide open to the fact that they need amenities or town hall space, common space, lounge space. It's all the same thing. I can drive to buildings in our market, very big buildings, 200,000 plus feet, that have beautiful 10, 12,000 feet of this magnificent glassed, empty, soulless space.
Right. Yep.
So we check the box. We need for these folks to hang out and we put it there. Why doesn't anybody use it? They're literally one step at a time. Well, now what? Like, someone tell us what to do now that we built it. The historical relationship with tenants was they call you when the toilet doesn't flush and you call them when the check doesn't cash.
Right.
And it's not, you know, by and large, it's not tremendously different industry-wide yet.
Totally. Right. I think that's why what you're doing is so interesting. And some of the conversations at the GW, like Industrious was talking about, you know, on Friday, Justin was saying, talking about the activation of those amenities. I mean, they're trying some pretty unique things like cooking classes on the rooftop and talking about like the Peloton races. And, you know, you can't just have a gym. Like, people have gym memberships. You got to do something interesting that brings people to it. And, you know, they may not have, you know, there's no silver bullet. And it's probably different by market. But you have to work at it. You can't just build it. And to your point, we toured, look, we've got the gym, rooftop. Yeah. No culture, but you're in charge of that. We don't do that. Yeah.
Well, that is what is keeping commercial real estate as a commodity.
Right.
And then it's just down to, all right, you're $28 a foot and the guy next door is $27.50. So there's no upside to that extra 50 cents. Why spend it? So it's a, they'll come around. And then people have stated, right, you need some of the bigger players to move first in commercial real estate. And everybody likes to follow the leader.
Yep.
So they'll get it and it'll come around and there'll be all these great articles on how innovative and wonderful these ideas are when we're not the only group doing stuff like this. There's other, you know, there's a million operators out there now, and I'm sure there's other folks that are going to listen to this and go, I've been doing the same thing in Toledo for 5 years.
Right.
Right.
Some here and there, although we need to tell the story more, because I think, you know, the stories that get told are the more institutional operators when it gets done on a larger scale. Mm-hmm. And somebody issues a press release and, you know, the story kind of travels. And so I think this sort of more micro stories just aren't getting told as much. And I think that's what helps, to your point, you know, sort of people have to see others doing it and understand there's a new way. And there are partners out there that can help me do this, which actually leads me into another question. I'm sure you've run across this in your, when you roll in with your 60 point checklist, do you run into building owners who think they want to do this themselves? Like they want to, you know, develop the ability to be launch. And how do you sort of help them with, do they want to do this themselves or do they want to partner with someone like you?
Another great question. The folks that we interact with don't. Again, I'm not institutional. We're not working with giant players.
Yep.
The folks that we are chasing, that are calling us, there's no interest in, this is not what I'm good at. This is not what I want to be good at. And this is why I will pay you to add this service to my building. We have not met a single owner so far that said, well, just teach me how to do it and then I'll do it myself. They've been, you know, just like in other parts of owning a building, there's just certain things you just don't want to bite off. And, you know, the dumb tax can be long and withstanding on this. You know, I went through plenty of really dumb ideas and tried a lot of things myself until we got, you know, a little bit more refined. But it goes back to the ownership of our business, committing to this, allowing it to take as long as it needed to get fully baked before we went out and took it to the market. So that's your dream owner.
Yep. And in terms of their capital issues, challenges, are they generally in positions where they're not concerned about the bank needing a lease on that space?
Interesting. You know, we've refinanced four of the buildings we had our own operations in. So, and ironically, when we opened in 2014, we refinanced the building that year. So that conversation, like that was like two meetings, like you had to give them a tour of like, wait a minute.
What are you doing? Why don't you? Yeah. You have revenue, but no lease. Explain.
So you'll let someone lease an office for 30 days. How does that work? It was a huge education. And 2018, and we do, you know, we like smaller local banks and, you know, the great rate wins, but you know, we've had relationships with these folks forever in this business.
100 years.
Yeah. Explain to them. Right. And then there were some spaces we're like, look, we made this decision based on, you know, on what we saw. We don't want to be dark. We don't want brokers to say, we joke and say when you commercial broker, I can't manufacture demand. Well, we can. So we've been actually applauded by some of the banks saying, you know, you didn't put your head in the sand. You didn't call it dark and say, what are we supposed to do? You were innovative and we understand your model. Most folks like to sign a 12-month agreement anyway.
Yep.
And what are the, okay, you have 78 license agreements. The odds that they all expire on the same day and leave together.
So they get that, right.
Yeah. Yep. So it's a lot more mainstream now than it was 5 years ago. There's not much explaining that you need to do. But again, if you need to give tours and explain the model, just be patient and educate them and then they know.
Do you, for your other building owners where you do management agreements, do you have to help their capital understand the model?
No. What we do, we create a lease. They lease the building to them, the space to themselves, just so there is some paperwork to describe what it is. So you create an LLC and run a business inside your building. So it's not this random idea. Our management agreements, we sign 10-year agreements with landlords, building owners. So there's a lot of paperwork that it clearly identifies the responsibilities of the relationship, length and terms and all that. It's, I wouldn't go into a building owner and just start saying, okay, we'll put a launch in here and we'll just start going office at a time without some idea of, you know, we like to paint a long horizon, show returns, you know, risk up front, returns in the end, the relationship, our growth schedule, I mean, really explain what we're trying to do and the benefits of partnering with us. And there's a lot of documentation so that everybody's comfortable and happy. And we haven't run into any problems ever with any of it.
I think that's one of the key points about when people ask about the details of what does the structure look like. I mean, really the important thing is the structure can be a lot of things, but it needs to be well documented.
Correct.
And the operating approach and what happens when, you know, what happens if the building's sold, what happens, right? All of those things are probably what matters as much as the structure of the deal.
Correct. I mean, like you said it perfectly clearly, is each deal can be a little different, but as long as it's well written and understood, everybody knows what they're supposed to do. Everybody knows what are the possible outs on anything, right? So if they're clear and you guys both agree, there's nothing to worry about.
Mike, anything you want to share before we wrap up here?
I would say to smaller operators, I consider us obviously a smaller operator, stay the course, keep your head down, chase it hard, get people to believe in what you believe in and help you, and just keep going after it. And hopefully, you know, things like GWA continue to exist and people continue to share ideas, because it was really breath of fresh air to go to that and hear real answers. I thought that was really great. And then the other side of the coin, I say to building owners, if we've learned anything in the past 2 weeks, bigger isn't better. I've been to so many conferences where people have stood on the front of the stage and said, well, we partnered with XYZ. They're the biggest and the best. In this world, the biggest is not the best. The best is the best.
I love that. That's a great quote to leave on. And just a quick note for our listeners, I will put Mike's info, link to his LinkedIn and whatever other contact info he wants to share in the show notes, which are at everythingcoworking.com/episodes/122. Mike, thank you for taking the time today to share your story and kind of all the details on what you're working on. It's been super interesting. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much. It was great.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.